Log Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome to the On The Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Happy New Year, everyone, one and all. Hopefully this year will bring you safety and prosperity. Thanking God for another year, another day, for being here. This last year has been crazy. We've lost so many important people. Many of us have lost personal people. We want to give our condolences to the family of James Avery. The actor, all of us knew him mostly as Uncle Phil from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but he's been around quite a few other places since then, and it's a sad loss because he definitely was everybody's Uncle Phil when The Fresh Prince was out. So our condolences and rest in peace, Mr. Avery. I want to say thank you to all of you that have been hanging out, especially to those of us that have been a part of my, New Year's Eve show. I want to thank every one of you for hanging out with me on that day. To the gentleman that was on the panel, you were absolutely awesome, and I appreciate the... Okay, let's get on with our shout-outs. To Barry Mason, formerly of 98 FM Radio, currently with IceWellRadio.com. You can hear him do his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m. and on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not doing that, he's gracing the best of New York City venues with the gracious R&B events that he has out there as the CEO of Track One Entertainment. So now there is a special announcement that Track One has set forth, which I will be spilling over to you guys. The online registration, okay, if you do it in advance, it's $25 for you aspiring singers who want a shot at this. You can select from over 1,000 songs from their playlist, and if you select the Whitney Houston song, you'll get bonus points on your score when the judges make their decision. You go to track1entertainment.webs.com. That's where the online registration is, or you can hit up Barry Mason on Facebook, and or you can email him at track1entertain@gmail.com for more information. And the beginning of registration has already begun, so go and get your spot before all the spots are taken up. To Barry, Happy New Year, and thank you for all that you have done for this show and on and off the air. I want to thank the Real World Black News and Discussions Group and the Black Love and Conversations Group for your continuous support and input, for your uplifting of the topics and of the show and of the work that we're trying to do here. Tonight's episode is sponsored by Morris Rights LLC by Akeem Zayed Bey, and I want to thank him for being the first one to step up and actually put a sponsorship forth, because it really means a lot. We've already been able to get a few things done, you know, based on his contribution. So, Hakeem, thank you. And to all of you that are involved with him, Happy New Year. To my team, definitely not least, but last mentioned, Lady Diamond Elaine Yeves, wishing you a speedy recovery. Monster Miles, thanking DJ Domerica Rodney Williams. All of you have heard his latest mix on the Saturday Showcase, and he was absolutely fantastic as usual. I want to thank him. He lost quite a few people in his family, so my condolences to him, and I thank him for giving us the mix anyway. And, of course, last but not least, that special and very, 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 very intriguing activist from Toledo, Ohio, Deacon Zeddy Williams. I want to thank him for all that he does and continues to do on and off the air. So now, tonight, everyone, we are going to be speaking on New Year's resolutions from a different angle. I am not speaking about our personal resolutions, about losing weight or exercising more or anything like that. What are we speaking about is how are we as an African-American people and minorities, are we going, what kind of resolutions do we need to make as people to get over this modern-day oppression and the stagnation in our progress and amongst ourselves? Now, when I get back, I will give you my list that I have out there, and I got a few interesting responses today. And definitely, one of the things on my list based on the pre-broadcast topic discussions today definitely was a definite on to happen, or what we must do. So I want to thank all of you that's already called in and waiting, and I want to thank the rest of you that are listening in by stream. So you know how this goes. We have our early break song, our word from our sponsors. As soon as we get back, this discussion is underway. Don't go away, folks. Be back in about 5 minutes.
Thank you. New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com on the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. All right. Tonight's topic is Don't Talk About It, Be About It, Resolutions of a Society. We are going to be touching base on all the things that we should be making resolutions to resolve the problems that we all speak about in terms of what it is African-American society is going through. What is it that is stopping us from having businesses? What is it that's stopping us from having virtuous and substantial relationships? Why our youth are out of control? And we've spoken about this from many different angles, on many different from many different viewpoints, with many different reasons. All of this has been something we spoke about. And one of the things that has come up is that there's a lot of Facebook activism and not enough physical activism. Not enough people are getting up to go off their computers to actually take their words to where it counts. All of us can unify at a time when we have a black candidate in office, yet not pay attention to the local and daily elections. All of these people that we voted in, we don't hold accountable. We allow things to happen into our neighborhoods and complain about it when it goes against us. Other main things, and my list is a list of seven things. My first thing is we need to stop the internal hating. I will give examples of what I mean by that in a minute, but one of the things that's a universal rule is if you are fighting inside, you're not going to be able to be a united front to the outside world. So if there's an army of people that's supposed to be going to war and they're fighting each other, the enemy has the upper hand. So my list of things that mean internal hating, talking about women and weaves, the choices they make, making it a condescension instead of uplifting them no matter what they choose to look like, speaking about complexion references between each other, how light skin is better than dark skin and vice versa, using the N-word no matter how which way you pretty up the spelling. Okay, constantly walking around talking about how, as one of the things came up in a group today, you know, black women are not good enough, or understanding black women is a problem. You know, things to that effect. We are making our own people our own enemies when it's the outsiders that are watching this happen. And each and every time that we're fighting, the louder the war, the more back hole entries they have. Number two, stop the shaking my head syndrome and actually do something. You can pick an article three times an hour and make 80 posts an hour, but you can't go out there and actually find out where it is in your neighborhood that this can be addressed and something can happen. Number three, stop laying down and accepting other cultures raping our land, our cultural signatures, and capitalizing from it from us. Meaning, you can't have people taking our hip-hop culture, going out there, making something big on national TV about it, and then turn around and don't like it because it was our idea, our creation, and then turn around and buy apparel, franchise, souvenirs, anything affiliated with that thing happening, because we will spend money. If we're going to spend money, why not spend it so that it comes back to us? Take charge of our youth one kid at a time and show them a different way. Stop chasing down Marianne after achieving success on the back of a Shaniqua. Now, for those of you who continuously scratch your head when I say this, kindly ask the question on the air and I will clarify it. But for those of you that are listening and still don't want to ask a question, here's what I mean by that. Our black men that deal with our black ladies, the ones that they say are loud, the ones that you see stereotyped in all these black hood movies, you know, they're walking around, they're loud, they're strong-willed women. They may not be very etiquette-ish when it comes down to, you know, putting their pinkies up while drinking tea, but none of that mattered when you were down and broke on your way to try to become a basketball star or become a lawyer or become something, and she believed in you. She shared her bed. She shared her food. She split her sandwich in half. She gave up her dreams to make sure you had one. If you went to jail, she stood by your side. Her name was, quote-unquote, Shaniqua. But as soon as you achieved everything that she helped you get to, suddenly she's not good enough for the table when you've gotten successful. Now suddenly she doesn't belong in country clubs because she's too loud or she's too black or she's too whatever. That's what I mean by chasing Marianne after achieving success on the back of Shaniqua. None of those things mattered when you were broke. Next up, stop being baby daddies and baby mamas and start being mothers and fathers, okay? On the other flip side of that, stop making baby mamas and then turn around and say, I don't want to date a woman with children, and vice versa, ladies. Stop the Facebook activism, number seven, and be an activist in your community. That's my personal list, and there's quite a few other things that's coming up. But in the meantime, this is what needs to happen. Don't talk about it. Be about it. You're sitting up on Facebook to say what? Everybody knows who you are because you come across with some great-sounding knowledge. That knowledge needs to be applied to something where somebody with power can make a difference, where there's enough people that will reach a mass media and be able to make a difference, or your outroar will be enough to aggravate some bigwigs up there, and somebody will listen even if it's to get you out of the air. That's where it should be. But this internal hating, before we can go out there and attack the world, we need to clean up our own backyard. And those of us that are walking around going, I don't know what she's talking about, what is she saying, that is the problem. We don't like what we see, and it's a lot better to point the finger outward than to say it's as bad as it looks and we need to change it. There are things we do wrong, too, and that's the things that we need to change to make it better in order for us to have real change and real solutions. Nothing's going to happen if you keep sweeping the dirt under the rug. You're never going to have a clean house. We do have two panelists in. I'm going to bring them in, and our discussion will be started. One moment. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yes, this is Stalo. Stalo Jenkins calling from D.C.
Hi, Stalo. Happy New Year. I have another panelist behind you. You'll be first on cue. Hang on 1 second. Welcome to the show, caller.
Hey, what's going on, Katie? It's Professor Carl Tone Jones from Philadelphia.
Hi,
Happy New Year, all.
Happy New Year to you. Thank you for joining me tonight. So I'm going to start with Stalo, okay, and then I'm going to go to you, Professor. Stalo, what's your take on tonight's topic, Art?
Okay, tonight we're making New Year's resolutions for the people, and I think that this is my spell on it. You know, if anything, leaving behind the year 2013 and going forward into the year 2014, we as a people, we just need to get our thought processes, our economic handles, and everything that involves our behavior has to get back to our older tradition. then we have to get back to the values and the things that we talk about. We talk about missing all the time. There's things that we miss back when we were safe here and we were this and that, and we reached out to one another and we were good to one another, this and that. And the things that we talk about missing all the time, now it's time that we've gotten over the 2013 hump of being more and more degraded. We see it and we keep discussing it and we keep talking about it. And those of us that remember a better time, or remember hearing the stories of a better time, or those of us who can't reach back into the values of old, you know, the things that kept us rising and rising and rising out of the muck and out of the mud of the economic oppression in the United States, you know, and you know, just about everywhere else. You know, at this point, we got to remember our elders. And moving forward, we can all just take a moment and remember your elders you have are still alive here, and those who have passed away, bless their soul. Remember them for a moment. And if you have them, talk to them. Talk to them. Try to understand some of their value systems and some of the things that, moving forward, we lose these things as we lose people. Okay? And as we are losing people, we see our people are degraded.
Absolutely.
Now we're gaining children, and we have to start with the children. So, you know, I work with children every day, and, you know, at the end of the day, they are the key to understanding the adults.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Tom Stalo. I couldn't agree with you more. Professor, the mic is to you.
Okay. And I've been listening for a few, and I really, really enjoy this topic. I agree with Stalo about, you know, the things we need to do in terms, especially dealing with the children. Anybody that has followed my work or seen anything know that I gear all of my teachings and all of my learning to the youth, because they're the ones who are going to steer us in the right direction. They're the ones who are going to take the first step. In terms of the New Year's resolution, I think that as a people, we just need to, those of us that know need to teach. And those of us that think we know need to be humble. Because I think one of the things that we suffer is humility as a people, to understand that we're in a bad situation and the situation is getting worse. I was in several social media groups, and to hear them talk, they talk about how they're the cream of the crop. But when you talk about the cream of the crop in the black community, you're really not aiming high. And you're talking about what, in terms of accomplishments. I mean, think about it like this. The typical black business is a bar, barbershop, hair salon. You may have an auto mechanic shop. You may have a small car dealership. But it's somewhere along those lines, a soul food restaurant. Now, when you think about the typical businesses in the white community, you're looking at all the skyscrapers in Manhattan. Not one of them owned by any of us. Now, all the skyscrapers in Chicago, St. Louis, Dallas, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, not one of them are owned by us. And just the revenue from one of those skyscrapers dwarfs our overall revenue as a people in terms of our businesses. So we need to really look at the you know, how to become more engaged in learning and understanding and utilizing group economics so that we can have an economic base to which we can go and teach, use those monies to rebuild the infrastructures of our communities. That money can go towards building schools, after-school programs. I have a friend that's involved in putting together after-school and summer programs right now. But it, just think about if we collectively take all of our monies that we just spend on liquor, that we spend on cigarettes, that we spend on things that we can't see, that things that are disposed of easily, high-priced sneakers, video game consoles, things of that nature, and we pool that money towards building up the infrastructure, buying abandoned houses on our blocks, building up the infrastructure, buying corner stores so that farmers no longer control the small things within our communities and how we could build those things up. So my goal is to teach those concepts And last but not least, and probably the most important of them all, is to start to teach us how to love ourselves and love each other. There's so much love missing in our communities today. We look at each other, and it's about the language. You said it before about saying the N-word, referring to each other as bees, baby daddies, baby mamas, things of that nature. And if we think about it for a second, all those concepts are things that drive us apart or make it easier for us to dehumanize ourselves and one another. And it's easy to hate a nigga. It's easy to hate a bitch. But it's hard to hate your brother and sister. So I want to start teaching the brother-sister love concept and focus our cause. Not to say that we need to have a Back to Africa movement, but we need to all understand that we are all part of the Africa diaspora. And being a part of that gives us this unifying cause. It gives us a unifying bond similar to the pride that Italians have. Now, I understand Africa is a continent, not a country, but unfortunately, because of the slave trade, a lot of our roots are cut off before the end of the Civil War. So based in Africa, we can use that common bond and find the love, that the unifying principles that could bring to foster more love, caring, and understanding within the community. Once we love and care for one another, it becomes easy to trust one another, and it becomes easier to work together. So those are just some of my resolutions for this year.
You're absolutely right. Panelists, I see you there. I'm going to bring you in just a minute. I will want to touch on a couple of things that you said. I know a lot of times when I read the posts from some of these Facebook activists, when I hear everybody use the phrase that you just said about going back to Africa or going back to our roots and stuff, and a lot of times we realize that our roots kind of, for us, for like the middle age to the modern-day children, we associate our roots with the slavery era. And the thing is that if you were to ask those elders, would they like to go back to that, they wouldn't. But they would like to bring up the values of what they learned in the middle of their struggles. How many of them still loved and cherished their wives while they were being beaten and ripped away from them? How many of them said they would sit there and fight to the death so that their children would not grow up to be enslaved that way or to be treated that way? How many of the 60s activists went out there, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, which a lot of these activists love referring to, but yet don't have half of the respect or cherish the value of what those men endured to get what opportunities we have in place for us today. That's one. We do need to go back to Africa, but we need to go back to the values behind the struggle. The values that our ancestors fought for to make sure that we could be on a radio show one day, or we could say, I want to be a lawyer, or we could say, I want to learn how to read. And I believe what you just said about teaching ourselves to love each other, which goes back, you know, hand in hand with me saying the self-internal hatred. It's disgusting. You know, I see more people in my local neighborhood will be the first, a black man will be the first one to tell a black woman, oh, you wearing that horse hair in your head or something like that. Meanwhile, that very look will be something that a European or a white man will pick them up and love them for and grace them for. Or if it was used or adopted by a European culture, which I was explaining to somebody on the chat room today, that while you're busy talking about weave discussions and the way that you bring it up is a good way to go, us very black women are in these hair shops getting rolled and steamrolled over by Latinas and Europeans trying to buy out the inventory without them needing it. You understand? And I can understand, and like I said, I see two panelists, and I'm going to bring them in. I can understand if the person went to a store, and they bought a straight weave, and then they bought a straight weave that had to be blonde, but there were other things that were said among with it, or other attitudes that was displayed before the hair choice came in, that you could start to question. But women and men, I brought up a counteraction. I'm sick and tired of brothers always going bald because LeBron did it or Michael Jordan did it. Everybody doesn't have the head to wear a bald look. Some of them look like one of those things from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. All right.
Well, you know, Katie, one of those things is, and we evolve. You know, now me personally, I love women that are natural. I love it because I love the natural beauty of a black woman. There's nothing that compares to it. But my whole philosophy behind that is, if we are going to indulge in that and weaves and things of that nature, then let's corner the market in terms of being and become the distributors of that business. Let's make it where the money is being recycled again. And there are ways we can do that. You know, so that would be my concept to it, but I'll let you go because I know you were on the roll.
No, well, I was going to say, I agree with you. It shouldn't matter. You know, listen, if I want to cut my damn hair and dye it blonde and red, you know, why is it not okay with my people if it's just something I feel like doing? I feel like expressing myself. I feel like doing whatever. It has nothing to do with it. Not going to understand if you want to ask a question, like why somebody like Tamar Braxton or Little Kim would feel the need to go to extremes in plastic surgery. Then you would start asking a question as to where that's coming from. Those two women are naturally beautiful women. But if you just... I want everybody to bear with me. We are having a storm blowing through here, so we're going to the drop mics at all points. But... as I was saying, there are people that are out there doing things that's not necessary, not at all whatsoever. So it's one of those things that has to be. So let me bring another panelist in for the evening, just one second. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Good evening, everyone, and a spirit-filled New Year to everybody and the family.
Thank you. There's another panelist behind you, Deacon. You'll have the floor first. Hold on. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, Happy New Year's to the panel. This is Altarique.
Hi,
Altarique.
Right, I'm going to need you to speak a little more clearly or a little bit away from your phone, okay, when it's your turn, because it's just a little muffled. Everyone, we're dealing with some impending weather, and it does affect the connections every so often. So if we get dropped, you guys just hang out, and, you know, I'll definitely reconnect. All right, Deacon, what's your take on tonight's topic?
Well, first of all, let me say that I agree with everything that Professor has put out there because he has hit the nail directly on the head when it comes to our people. And also, I agree with Altarique. There's
stay
so many things that stay low.
Yeah, it was
Stalo. Okay, that was Stalo. Okay, I apologize for that. With the situation that's going on in today's society, it's really amazing to me because I feel as though that our people just haven't grasped hold of reality yet, and it seems like we have been standing in the dark for so long. It seems like we're afraid to come out of it. That shouldn't be, and that shouldn't be.
Well, see, but you know what, Deacon, and we have spoken about this in previous segments, and I believe that, Professor, you've been on one of them. I think, Stalo, you're like, between these two men, I think you're like one of my newer panelists. But the problem is with being afraid to come into the light means that if you come into the light, a lot of things will be revealed maybe about you that you don't
Correct.
Want to be revealed. Okay, and that's just the problem. Enough with that garbage, because that's the reason why we get to lean on these excuses, okay? And that's why we get to lean on these excuses. We get to keep saying, well, I can't get a job because the man won't let me. Who the hell is the man if you don't let him be one?
Yeah.
Well, you know what, too, Katie?
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, I'll catch you on. I'm sorry, Katie. You know what? One of the issues that I'm having, though, within our community, because sometimes I think we are our own worst enemy when it comes to that, because so many of us want to aspire to be equal to the dominant culture, that we will cut each other's throats. We will step on each other's feet. We'll pull each other down to try to ascend to that part in society. And that part of society wants no part of us. And it's been made clear over and over again. And right. they hold the, you know, but there's some people who are blind to that concept, and they have what I like to refer to as the niggerization of the mind, which
right.
they has been implanted in us in slavery, which states that we don't look at each other as equals. I may look at myself
right.
as equal to a white man, but ain't no other black person. There's nothing they could tell me. They have
right.
their works have to. You know, I saw a debate, a Facebook debate. It's funny, but
uh-huh.
and these brothers were talking about historical. They were talking about people who have theories and philosophies, and they were there was a brother named Amos Wilson, Umar Johnson, a couple other people, and basically what he said was, all their work is theoretical. I need their work validated before I can accept any of their information. Now, my question is, because later on I would watch this guy later on in the post state that all the people that all the information that he addresses or believes, he's talking about Darwin and things of that nature, and I'm saying, why do we need the validation of the Europeans for our information to be correct?
And
yeah. factual? But it goes
you
back
know what?
To... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Professor. I just, because I know that I lose my train of thought. I'm older than all of y'all.
okay.
No, what I was going to say with regard to that is this. First of all, with regard to Darwin said we came from apes, so I wouldn't believe him, even if he was documented. The other thing is that I did lose my train of thought.
The whole concept behind it is nothing we do will ever be good enough because we'll always still need the validation of the European in
right.
order to obtain proper credit or proper status to something. So we always, that's how we've been trained to look at each other, distrustful,
right.
never good enough, you know, not educated, not smart enough, we don't evolve enough. So there's always that way that we are taught to look at each other. And for those of us that break away from that matrix, it's so hard to pull anybody else out. Because
you know what? You're
they
right. It did come
buy
back.
Into that.
It did come back into you. Listen to this. This is the way I feel about that, okay? It's good to look into history, and it's good to look into all the things that, you know, we've come from so that we know where we could go. Because, you know, there's no present and future without a past. Here's my thing with this, though. You said something very important not 3 minutes ago where you said that everybody's always looking to the equal and that society will never accept us. That is the problem. We dream big, but we want to work small. We keep on trying to put our goals, our immediate goals. Now, there's a difference between what your long-term goals are and what it is that you're going to achieve in the meantime. Okay, it's like people that want to grow up and own a business one day, but they first got to work at a fast food place to get the money to do whatever. You know, it's like this. Stop looking to be where we know. We know that that a European society is never going to come to the point of saying that, you know what, maybe we should stop doing what our ancestors did. Maybe these people's resourceability should be able to help us. Maybe we can learn from each other. The days of Thanksgiving pilgrimage is over, if it ever really existed. But the problem is that we don't learn how to work with what we have. We never do, because it means working. It means looking at things that can go wrong. It means looking at things that are wrong with us. What when I talk about this, I always bring up that good men segment that I did. I had women looking at me like, you're crazy, you're a traitor. I'm a traitor for saying that women do wrong too. This
no,
is what
I mean.
I mean.
But the point
mm-hmm.
I was getting at, Katie, is
the delusion we think there's a war against some.
You're
getting a little muffled, Professor.
I'm sorry. Oh, so the point I was getting at is we never accept what we do as good enough without the validation or without the accreditation of the white community. We never
That's
look
true.
At what we never look at our cops. So in trying to fit into and blend into a culture and society that doesn't want us there, I propose, and I'm not the only one, that we build, that we rebuild our community so that we can become self-sustained again, because at one point we were self-sustained. And so that we can become self-sustained again, work commerce within our community so that we can build and work commerce with our community so that our children can see that, wow, the black community is doing well enough that we don't need to aspire to try to fit into a society that looks at us as workers and looks at us as useless eaters, but fit into a society that looks at us as brothers and sisters and our children. You know, that they look at us as their elders, you know. So that's what I'm aspiring for in 2014.
I'm going to bring up an example because you're right. You're right in the middle of this, and that's the one thing. We have choices that we can make. We have the resourceability and the resourcefulness to sit there and say, I don't want to do this anymore. Now, it's going to be hard. We spoke about when we had the Truth or Stereotype segment with Ishmael. Ishmael spoke of a black-oriented group, a black group that's doing black-oriented for the black community programs. One of his problems is people won't step up in our own area. This is something that he's doing for the black community. And people have why is it we question and have skepticism and suddenly we're dictionary readers when it comes down to something we're trying to offer to your own community? I'm going to give you a little bit of an example, okay? When I was a young mom, I'll say maybe 21, okay? I worked for this local pharmacy. This guy was really smart. He knew how to capitalize on every bit of anything that was out there in the black neighborhood. He was a white pharmacy owner, okay? Right out there in Jamaica, Queens. I was a mom. Those of you that are not familiar, but if everybody here is familiar with the WIC program, all right? It's a nutritional program that they give pregnant women, infants, and children up to 5 years old foods and, you know, healthy food that they can be able to obtain through vouchers. Now, every time you had to go out and you had to go cash these vouchers in person at a supermarket, okay, or a local store that was authorized to accept it. Now, this guy, smart as he was, and I think I admired him for that because I was always trying to look for businesses to do, this man decided, wait a minute, why not offer a delivery program to these mothers? Because most of them were poor, like a week postpartum. It's hard for you to get out and go walking, you know, to go to the store to get baby formula. And usually the baby's fathers were dumb as hell when it came down to knowing how to pick out the products that go with the vouchers. So they get aggravated. This man said, all you have to do is when you pick up, go home. Here's our number. Call us. We have every product of every type that you could need from this. Tell us what you want. What you do is you call us. We'll deliver it to your door. You will sign your checks at the door when you get your products, and you turn it over to our driver, simple as that. I'm like, okay, great. Wait a minute. You mean I don't have to leave my house? And wait, hold on a minute. So how does this work? I sign my check. He goes, no, we don't take your checks till you get your products, which is the way it would be if you were standing face-to-face with a cashier in the supermarket. So what I get from these women coming out with their 6 kids and their 4 kids and their babies, no, I don't think so. Suddenly you're skeptical about something that can't go wrong because it's right there. The man is going to take your signed checks, which you don't sign until they're at the door, as you can't do, so you get there to your products are right there, and you have a printed receipt with the prices for each item. He's going to bring you the receipt. You're going to sign your checks when the delivery comes. What's the problem? Suddenly, everybody was skeptical. So most of them took 3 months of going out in the cold, the rain, the sleet, the heat, everything, to do this until they finally realized it was a legitimate program. Let somebody come in from the trunk of their car and go, we got the Jordans for half off. See how fast people will be up there and be like, oh, only thing they'll ask is this the real thing?
Well, you know, Katie,
it's funny, but it's serious, you know?
Yeah, well, it's funny. It's not funny, ha-ha. Now, when you look at that whole concept that you brought up and you talked about the new Millennium Leaders, which I'm a part of, one of the things that we have to understand we are not going to be able to save everybody, and we're not going to be able to change everybody. So we have to start working with like-minded individuals, because that's what we're going to need to refuel our batteries to continue to move forward. We're going to have to leave some people behind. And let's face it, for some people, they don't really need to be a part of what we're trying to do here. And we just have to be honest and real with that.
That's true. I need to give Al Tariq the mic because he's been very patient and silent in the corner. So, Al Tariq, give your spin on it this year.
Yeah, I basically agree with everybody was saying. And but the thing about it, you know, a lot of times people don't realize, or when you look at everything, like how you were saying about history. I remember I was watching something, and it was based on Ole Miss, the college in Mississippi. And it was a saying that this older white guy said, and he said that the past is the present. You know, so a lot of times I really, really feel as though a lot of times, you know, when it comes to, like, certain amounts of our people, we don't realize that we're at war. Even when you're in the game, you know, and you're playing sports, it's like minor warfare. Now, if you look at how we were brought here and how we were reared up, it tells you in scripture to rear up a child and where it go. But that's supposed to be positive. But what about if somebody reared you up in another way, in a negative way? This is the reason why a lot of us are the way we are, because slavery was warfare. It wasn't just, oh, y'all come over here and do this, and we're going to pay you. And they just walked over our people. So we had to make best do with what we can, and we still are basically doing that today. After they let us free, certain ones, I think it was like 60 towns that was like black towns. And they were starting to thrive and stuff like that. But guess what? Start neutralizing all that. So a lot of what goes down when our people think that we can get ahead is always a thing of fear there. And until we can get over the fear, yeah, we were taught and bred in fear as well. You know, we had love because we knew who we were initially, but we were taught hatred. And that's what a lot of people forgetting to realize. This stuff that's going on with the children, this knockout stuff and all that, we are even getting set up to look at our people through the media's eyes and stuff. Oh, yeah, certain people that do certain things wrong, yeah, but you got to look at the big picture and everything that's going on. And it's certain wheels in motion that a lot of us are not even seeing.
I want to touch on a couple of things you said, Al Tariq. You're talking about we're afraid. We're afraid. Right nowadays, we're afraid. Let me ask you a question. Then how is it our ancestors, or at least, you know, the older black people from the 60s and the 70s, why is it in a time when segregation was pretty blatant, slavery was over, but segregation was still alive and well? I brought this story up quite a bit of times, that my father at 4 years old got backhanded in front of my grandfather because he drank from a white fountain. And then that man told my grandfather with a gun to his face, go ahead, I dare you, nigga. You understand? Why is it that with all of that being out in the open, and it was legal and everything, the biggest fearful thing that was right out there, they still managed to have businesses. We still have grandfathers that could pass a house they owned down to their next generation. Why is that? Of course we know that there are horrible things out there that's going on. That's no secret, but that's what everybody's talking about. Nobody's doing anything around that. We are scared. We're scared, but guess what? You know what? You ever hear that saying that a cornered animal, timid as they might be, come out fighting?
That's right.
Oh, well, Katie, if I may interject, I agree with the brother 100%. I'll even add something to it, that the Ku Klux Klan was brought here by secret societies over in Europe, specifically.
And Black Panthers
after
was
recent,
out at one point, too.
Well, but you have to understand the dynamics of the whole spectral dominance. You know, we're dealing with a situation that's not as cut and dry. It's not black and white. We're dealing with a complex situation where manipulators from the outside control the entire environment. So you talk about, why is it that we had movements when people were held at gunpoint, when lynching was a day-to-day thing, and lynching is still happening. But just let me interject this one point. The fear was interjected into us generationally. You know, even today, you'll find the roughest, toughest people in your neighborhood go to a white community, and they don't practice that same behavior because they know there's a consequence to that. You know, in addition to that, we also had government programs designed to infiltrate and take down any type of movement in the communities. And when you think about the FBI, people think the FBI was created to bring down organized crime. Well, according to a lot of the literature and a lot of the research, and you can go back, the FBI and the NAACP were created to take down any militant black movement, to stop the rise. If you look at the COINTELPRO papers, the first directive is to prevent the rise of the black messiah. So we have to understand those policies are still in effect. They're covert now, they're black ops now, but those policies are still in effect. Just like I told people in my lecture when I did What About Us, if you go back and you look at the Trayvon Martin case, all we heard about throughout the entire time when after George Zimmerman was on trial and the verdict was, well, what about black-on-black crime? Look into Chicago. A month after the trial, you didn't hear anything about Chicago. We still haven't heard much about Chicago. Now, did crime stop? But, you know, and that's the fourth branch of government also interjecting, which is the media, which is pumping out and putting out all types of psychedelic music, telling our children that it's okay to have no rules, no structure, to get high, and things of that nature. And the thing is, all of these things are working towards, first of all, they're aiming at children now. And if you ever want to read a book that talks about the education system, I suggest everybody go out and check Charlotte Isabite's The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, in which she described how there were 50-year and 100-year plans put in place by people from the Skull and Bone Society, different Masonic organizations, put in place to deliberately dumb down the children and to create the prison industrial complex.
So, and then here's what I say to that, Professor. Yes, did I say anything about it being easy? Hell no. We've got the biggest, toughest thicket of bushes to go through. The problem is, listen, there might be organizations that's designed to bring us down. By the time that they could figure out a way to just come and get us and put us into some prison, something could have been done, or at least enough of a seed could have been planted. If you have all this information, like you were talking about with the book that you just mentioned, if we have all this information, you've got advanced knowledge and to teach your children how to be educated. Regardless of what they think, and I'm not saying I'm gonna let you interject in a minute. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm not saying at all that we're not up against a hell of a fight. But I'm saying, what are we doing? Not only that. Okay, let's take out that part for 1 minute. Let's talk about the stuff that don't hurt us or is not illegal or is not fear to the government. Okay, what about us going out there and buying stuff with somebody that's deliberately making us look like fools? Case in point, Jay-Z. Case in point, Barney's.
That's a choice you can make
to say no way.
That's all relative. And then when you look into segregation and the desegregation movement, then you have to understand that we are lied to so much on our about history. We're told so much lies about why things happened historically that we don't grasp the concept. Desegregation was never about making it where blacks could sit at the lunch counter with whites. It was never about riding in front of the bus. Desegregation was more about integrating the black dollar, because the black communities were prospering. And, yes, we know this. But then we talk about the whole system of how it's sold. I mean, think about it for a second. We're talking about this on the show. Now, if you stop brothers and sisters out in the street and try to have this conversation with them, most of them will walk right past you. They don't want to. They don't want to talk to you. They don't have the time.
Yes.
Why?
Yes.
Because of all
That's
the distractions
true.
That are involved, all the lies
yeah.
that they're sold, and you're beat down week in and week out. The whole plantation mentality is still relevant today, where you work the slave 40 to 60 to 80 hours a week. You gave them the weekend. You got them liquored up. You got them drunk. And then you sent them back to work on Monday. There was no time for revolution, no time for planning. That they were, we were rewarded for snitching on each other. We were rewarded for making whites rich. You know, if you look back into...
And then it shows right after. I get that. So my question is this. When do just plain old people, plain old adult people, grown-ass people, when do they stop walking and saying, well, the history said this, and start making a daily decision in their regular lives, okay? It doesn't take documentation to decide that you're not going to go to the Walmart that just kicked out your black person and buy from them. It doesn't take a documentation to sit there and say, I don't want my son's pants taken off his ass. It doesn't take documentation. That it takes human choice. It takes people using their brain. It takes people not liking what they grew up suffering and saying that I'm not going to let that happen here. It takes that. It takes people saying this is going to be hard, but I've got to do it because somebody else's life is at stake that's not my own.
And I'm
when
also
does it take that? Everybody,
yeah, no, but,
I'm so tired. I'm so tired of it. I am.
But you see where you are, though?
Death.
Katie, do you see where you are? This is where you are right now in life. Before you got to here, you were somewhere else 10 years ago. 20 years ago, you were somewhere else.
I have to say, I was thinking a little bit above the collective. And I'm not saying above in sense of superiority. I'm saying that I never gave a damn what the hell people thought of me. If you went, the way I used to have this philosophy was this. If you're not screwing me, taking care of my rent, taking care of my future, or taking care of my kids, to hell with you.
Right.
And I've always been
also,
that way.
But you also have to look at the fact that everybody's not where you are yet at spiritually, emotionally, educational-wise. And right now, you see the painting on the wall. You can see what's about to happen. But there was a time when none of us, unless we were born in the movement, there was a time when none of us saw what was going to happen 10 years down the line, when none of us took an analytic view of what was happening in our society outside of what's happening to us personally. And for some people to grasp that frame of mind, that frame of consciousness, I mean, that concept, you have to have an elevated thought process. Now, you got things, and I was just talking to a brother last night. His name is Brother Rashid. He happens to be my cousin. He also does lectures. And we were talking about how the television dulls your mind, how we go into a sleep-like state every time we're in front of a television. If you ever look up and you ever check out research on television and flicker rates, you'll understand why every commercial has sex in it. So when you think about that, we are being lulled to sleep as a community, more fluoride in our water every day. And you have to really understand that fluoride is the number one drug in antidepressant medication and psychotic medication, antipsychotic medication. So why is it in there? It's because it dulls the senses. And we are bathing in fluoride every day. We're using fluoride to brush our teeth. We're using fluoride as drinking water and cooking water. We use fluoride every day. And when you understand that, there's a lot of people that just don't fight. And we've also been beaten down. Our best revolutions have been co-opted. You had the Black Panthers. They were co-opted. From the inside. I mean, Fred Hampton's own bodyguard set him up to be murdered. You know, so these things take time. That's why I say we have to surround ourselves with like-minded people. Because if you don't surround yourself with like-minded people, what happens is you'll get frustrated like you are, and then you'll say, what the hell? What am I doing this for? And then you'll throw your arms in the air and walk away from it. And a lot of people have.
I'll look at my 10 children and say, that's the reason why I'm doing it. I've got 3 that are parents that's got to teach their children something. I've got one that's just made 18, that's about to make 18. Now she's going to be responsible in the world for herself, you know, according to laws, that is. Then I've got a couple of others, teens. I've got preteens. I've got elementary school kids. That's what I'll do it for. And if it's the not in my backyard mentality that's going on, then maybe we should bring the awareness that you start small. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe if you talk about too many big goals or too many widespread, overall, whatever, it is too scary. If it is too scary to deal with. But, you know, like I said before in the previous segment that you and I shared, Professor, maybe if we start dumbing it down, if you want to say it that way, and speaking about how politics affects your ability to buy Jordans, maybe that'll bring them somewhere.
You could.
If that's what it takes. If that's what it takes. It's the same way that, I'm sorry, it's the same way teachers have to teach different grade levels. They teach preschool children with music and arts and cartoons. They teach older children a little more with less visual aids. They go higher up and they start talking what kids understand. What they do is they'll start talking about a music video, something that appeals to that age group that makes them understand it on the level that it needs to be understood for their age group. It is tiresome to sit there every day and go, well, you know what, I'm not doing that because I just read something in Wikipedia and it said this. Enough already. Give me a break. Use that for betterment, not use it for excuses.
And
you're
right.
Is it easy? Hell no. Is it easy? Hell no. They're taking our housing. They're taking poor people's food money. They're doing all sorts of stuff. So what, doesn't anybody stop and say, well, wait a minute, if I've been depending on this all along, and they're about to take it, and there's nothing we could do about it, what's my backup plan?
Courage
is the opposite. Doesn't anybody stop and think that?
Courage is the opposite of conformity. And how many people actually have courage? You were just talking about Facebook activists. The reason why people can be Facebook activists is because it takes absolutely no courage to sign a petition. It takes absolutely no courage to voice an opinion on Facebook and become a doctoral candidate overnight on Facebook and all these other social media outlets. Half the time, people don't even attach their own pictures to it. So it takes courage to be the one to step out in the street. It takes courage to be the person that initiates change. A lot of people may want to change, but they're waiting for that first person to step up and be the one out there. And that's what it takes,
Katie.
Absolutely. It takes courage.
One thing I will bring up is this. Everybody's talking about that these X, Y, and Z organizations will stop us, will do whatever. Guess what? That's exactly what everybody was saying when the Montgomery, Alabama bus boycott took place. But eventually, at the end of it, they can't push us into the corner for too long because we're the spending people. And the only thing that European society understands is money. So if they eventually at one point gave us what we wanted and what we were marching for, after all the beatings didn't work and the holding down didn't work and all the other stuff didn't work, eventually we wind up getting to choose where we want to sit on the bus now.
Why
because
we
they
buy
understood
our own
that money was going there.
We used to have our own buses. But go ahead, brothers. I've been hogging up the mic.
I had wanted to make a point in how things can be so hectic and just how rampant, you know, fears. And I understand just what you're saying, KD, you know, because we do have to do better. Because a lot of time people, like, I've been in a situation right here where I live, and it's, oh, my God, you know, this is called Dothan, Alabama, and I'm originally from up north, from New Jersey, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gotten a situation here where they kept letting these pit bulls get out. And it was my neighbors in the back of us, so they have a leash law here. So
right.
It happened about five or six times. They bit up one lady that we knew, and they almost got at two elderly ladies that live next door to where I stay. But guess what happened? They kept letting it go on. They kept giving the people warnings, and that was it. They would never do nothing to the people. And then, see, I got like a mobile detail unit, so I go out and do work like that. So when I go to the white neighborhood of Dothan, Alabama, I don't see not one dog running around there unless you got some of the people with a leash and they're walking the dog. But on the area of town where I live at, you will see dogs. It was so bad at one time, these country dogs would lay in the middle of the street. And you'll be driving up and they'll sit there like, you know, to move. You know, and I mean, they don't do nothing. And that's how hard I went to trial over this, because they said that I was being, what's the name of that? The charge
a menace?
That they gave me. Not a menace, because I was talking, I had got upset, but I still was like calm where I could speak well, and I wasn't like cussing them, saying, you know,
oh, F y'all and this and that. I was just saying, man, y'all need to do something. And I kept asking the dog pound guy, what's your description? You've been here like 3 times. Why are y'all not doing anything about these dogs? I said, what's the infractions for this? He wouldn't tell me. Like, guess what he told me? You need to hush before I get you hushed up. And he also said that, now he really went there with me. He said that, and this is supposed to be a brother. He said, well, people like, he said, see, this is why stuff like that and Martin Luther King and stuff like that, we can't get nowhere because of people like this. Saying because, I said, no, Martin would be on my side because I'm standing up for these people here as well as over here and who I stay with, and she has grandkids, and we got to worry about a neighbor's pit bull keep getting out after you already told them. I went to court, and it was for disorderly conduct. They locked me up because they wouldn't come over to speak to me. It was already in place how they set up everything. See, and this one, a lot of times the people, I'm down here in the area where what's his name? Al Sharpton's family is down here where I'm at. Al won't even come down here. It's been instances where people have been hung and everything. He will not touch Dothan, Alabama, because the Good Boy Network down here is that powerful. He won't even mess with his hometown.
That's a sad situation because he was the representative of the person that went up in controversy against all those people. He's been shot at for so-called activist work. Listen, I lived right across the street in a homeless shelter from Al Sharpton's headquarters. You couldn't find help over there for a damn thing if you wanted to. And I was one of those people that spoke against it. All right? New York City had a law that certain things that they deemed uninhabitable, okay, they would take you out of a home you know for supposedly lack of quality of life. And then after they forcibly remove you, they still put you through eligibility processes, which in my opinion, if I came to you on a volunteer basis stating that I needed a place to stay, that's when I should have to go through an eligibility process where you would have to prove that I certainly need these services. But if you know that the city of New York came in and took us out, there should be no questions asked. Because I didn't ask you to take me the hell out of my basement. And unfortunately, Al-Tariq, America is based on an outbreak happening before they take action. Something has to take place. Look how long it took for them. And I've done 2 college reports on this, just to let you know. One second. Just to let you know, I did 2 college reports on this very thing. All of the outsourcing that they have done to get cheaper labor for big products, all of the jobs they have taken out of our own home garden to flourish other people's life, because no matter how much of a price cut America is paying, in their money, it's a lot of money. American penny is a lot of money to some countries. So, meanwhile, they're out there outsourcing and they're making things like baby safety products, okay, their home protection, things to that effect. And it's coming back where they know that they're being built with faulty parts, okay? How many times did a baby's finger have to be clipped in a car seat? Or how many babies had to die from a faulty car safety product? How many children, which one of my twins, as a matter of fact, almost had that happen to him, escaped out of a stair gate that was supposed to be made to keep the children from getting out onto the staircase, where I woke up one day and found that one of my sleeping twins had gotten up quietly, pushed past this gate, and was out on the street where a neighbor had to come out, turn the corner, and stop cars in the middle of the street from my child getting out. And they know this. So until enough babies die, then they'll make action. There's a Consumer Fraud Bureau in place, Better Business Bureau, Consumer Safety Bureaus, yet they're not making any noise about people like pit bulls that's coming out until some major thing happens or until one of their own get affected by it.
Guess what?
Well, you're trying to apply human logic to that stuff, and a lot of that stuff is handled in accounting offices and board meetings and determining the financial gains versus the financial laws and tort reform and all those other things.
I was just pointing out what you said with regards to you went to court several times on this pit bull situation, and nothing was done about it. As a matter of fact, they tried to shut you up. That's the reason why, because America doesn't act unless, A, there's a major outbreak that the public is finally reacting to, or one of their own got messed up. A, there's been a situation for how long? But until Rock Hudson, the big superstar and sexy ladies man, was revealed to be a homosexual that contracted the disease, did it become something that now they want to cover in medical insurance? After trying to put a cover spin and have him marry the most beautiful starlet in Hollywood to cover up his real orientation?
But, you know, the old saying, perception is reality. And, you know, to touch back on that case where you know, the brother was talking about the dogs in the situation, mm-hmm. and when you look at it, historically, our communities suffer from benign neglect, historically. Right. And when you look at benign neglect, it's ways that they are run down, it's ways that they are allowed to run down, it's redistribution districts so that all the economics go to one place, it's putting tech edicts and order in place so that people can prosper off of living in certain areas and have their tax dollars support another, is rezoning of schools and things of that nature. So, and then let's talk about gentrification. Because if enough dogs are running around biting up the elderly in my community, first thing I'm thinking of, if I'm not thinking outside the box, is, man, I need to get out of here. I need to get my family out of here. So, because I'm pretty sure that's not the only issue. You know, I'm pretty sure crime is allowed to go on. The streets aren't safe. The police are slower to respond to certain things. And it's not by accident. None of this stuff is happening by accident. You know, there are closed-door meetings that go on, and we have to acknowledge that. You know, I went from being a huge conspiracy theorist to understanding that everything is not a conspiracy, but conspiracies take place. There are people behind
right.
closed doors making decisions that profit certain communities and take away from others. And
you
we
know what?
Have...
I'm sorry, Professor. What you said earlier about, you know, you would start thinking in a neighborhood like that, that you got to get your family out of there. To get a little bit back on the topic tonight, our people would call that a traitor move, which goes mm-hmm. back to the internal hating. And while we're busy... pointing the finger at the blonde weave and the loud mouth and the this and the that, and, you know, here we are saying this about our own, and light skin ain't good enough and black skin is too dark. The outsiders are watching us because we are a fascinating people. And saying, that's the way I'm going to go in and get them, right there. As soon as they start pointing the fingers that way, let's go in and grab what's in the back door.
Well, we have to also understand, Katie, that these communities plan in 10, 20, 25, 50-year increments. They don't just plan to take over or just plan things in one night. You know, one of the things that I wanted to propose, and it's one of the things that I talked about at the aftermath of my lecture, Poor Etiquette, that we just did about a week and a half, about 10 days ago, is that we need to start having Saturday morning meetings so that we can determine and plan and build in our community. Get together on a Saturday morning, have breakfast or brunch, and have meetings so we can address these things on a weekly basis. That's one of my proposals. And the reason behind that is if you look into the Jewish community, and I know this for a fact, my uncle works in the Jewish synagogue, every Saturday there is an all-day conference, an all-day conference where the family's there, the children's there, and the men and the women go off, they have meetings, they discuss the community, they discuss where their money is going to be invested, they discuss every single thing, they discuss the crime, they discuss, you know, the next moves of the organization, everything. They have these discussions every single Saturday. And I'm thinking, why can't we learn from this? Have these discussions every single Saturday. Pick that day. So Friday night we can't go out and get turned up because we need to be at this meeting center you know, Saturday morning, and figure out different ways to take back our communities. It's going to start small, but just like the crappy little cat house that I built for my cats that I posted on the Internet a few days ago, if you build it, they will come. So we have to build it, and we have to give people a reason to believe. They don't have a reason to believe. Just like Ishmael said in the video, we got to make them believe. And if we make them believe, then we can do great things.
I need to ask you two a question, because this particular post really, to me, reflected the self-internal hating and ignorance that we bestow upon each other. But this particular gentleman posted something that said, do you agree that trying to understand black women is trying to, it's like trying to smell the color hate? Okay? Now, I don't remember, I'm trying to find the post word for word, because somebody wrote back, which I appreciated them for, and said, the problem is that we have to start understanding. It's not so much about black women per se, but a lot of times, you know, black men don't know that to understand themselves. So coming in, you know, they don't do certain things that is deserving of what a black woman offers. So this particular gentleman wrote back and said, when they start acting like queens, then I'll treat them as such. And then he said, I love my black women, but that's where it stops. So now I wrote back that, frankly, you most black men wouldn't know a queen that they already have and wouldn't know what to do with them. Because, see, here's the deal. A black woman is the most forgiving. As a race, we are, period. Well, we are the most forgiving. We're the most resilient with our men. We're the most persistent in defending him. We will give up our dreams for him to have one and everything. The problem, as I said before, is we'll start off with Shaniqua and then get successful and look for Marianne. And then suddenly, look, two examples that sort of pissed me off, because they spun a good thing about it, but behind it, they're covering up the bullshit with it. Excuse my French on the air. Okay? Hey, Dwayne Wade and now Ludacris. Both of them in relationships just had babies or about to have a baby with side ladies, right? Okay. Now, for Dwayne Wade, they polished it up and they tried to bring up more of the, he's taking control of his children as a good father. Forgetting the fact that he just asked somebody to marry him, and they've been together, and now there's another non-black baby mama on the side, right? Who he's probably going to take that baby from her and raise so he can show that he's this big, you know, I take all care of all my children type person. Now, Luda says something on the headline that says, I claim the baby, but I want to keep the baby mama out my pocket. Well, here's my answer to that. Why didn't you keep your penis in your pants and out of her body?
Well, you know, Katie, the fact that conversation is taking place during lives talks about the deficits that we face as a people and society. Mm-hmm. Because the fact that we are spending so much time psychoanalyzing each other, instead of just saying, man, do I love this woman? Does she love me? Am I complete enough to even go after a woman? Or do I have deficiencies and I want her to fill my deficiencies and vice versa? The fact that these conversations are taking place shows our overall deficiencies, that we've been so beat down psychologically through history, that we are, I mean, think about it for a second. In the history of the black male in this society, he's been emasculated over and over and over again, having his privates torn from his body, lynched in front of his woman, beat down in front of his woman. Then the sisters are emasculated, you know, or defeminized. So they're making the brothers who's just beat down watching his wife be raped over and over and over in front of them. And
yep.
So, and then it's happening behind closed doors. But you know what happened. And now you say, go out there and love each other. And then I'm powerless against the master of the plantation. And so I need to take my anger out on who's available, who is safe to take it out on. That's each other. And that's the hatred that's built up over and over and over. And until we learn to love ourselves, how can I love you? If I don't love me, how the hell am I going to love you?
And that's exactly what the outsiders capitalize on. That's why when we spoke about the last one, the last time we spoke, how we will accept that Hollywood will only let a black quote-unquote movie be make the cut if it's about oppression and slavery, if it's about making us look like drug-dealing thugs, if it's about putting our culture under some clown limelight.
Look at what happened to Denzel and Halle Berry.
Yeah, exactly. Denzel and Halle Berry. We brought
that
up too. That was the specific example. All right? Years and years and years that these two have well played some roles of upstanding people that had brains, that had guts, that had panache, and they sat up there and gave them access into the Oscar world over selling themselves short.
Mm-hmm. Over
and
Halle Berry becoming a bad wimp.
Oh, my God.
And Denzel
and
becoming an overlord. Yeah.
Right. And all of a sudden, we all sat there clapping twice as loud. Wow. Oh, my God. That's right. Denzel and Halle broke the mold. No, they didn't. You idiots.
Yeah.
No, they did not.
We're
sitting here clapping because they said that she played a good crack whore who's sleeping with a racist white man who put her man in jail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and walk into the electric chair. So, you know, but that image is powerful. I'm sorry, Bubby, go ahead.
I was coughing, so I hope you didn't mistake
okay.
that.
You got to look at this, too, though. Not to cut you off, but just to get this point in real quick. Even how they took in a black man, and I'm laughing to keep from crying about it, but most of our stars, the one that's big stars, most of them had to play women roles.
I knew you was going there. That's right. And to emasculate them further, and then when you understand the psychology of that, to see them, bright lights, you're walking past billboards, you're getting hit with commercials, you're getting hit with that on television shows. I mean, then, you know, you can't even fund a black show to have the actual characters on there, so now you have to have people play six different people, two females and two men. You know, it's just ridiculous. And then that power, that concept worked. I mean, Alan Watts had an interview with a member of the CIA, and he asked the guy in the CIA, and you can find this on YouTube, and Alan Watts asked, what is the biggest weapon that has ever been proposed to the American public? And the CIA officer said, the television is the biggest weapon. We use it to propagandize all the information. We use it to control the people. And then you think about Edward Bernays, and Edward Bernays talking about putting the power of a few, putting the power to control the many in the hands of a few people through propaganda, through selling them through visions and auditory responses and continuously feeding the lies, and eventually people will buy the lies. And you think about how we've been sold this all these years. I mean, think, you know, we were encaptured. We were, as people, and I'm just putting this in a historical context, so I know time is running short. We were enslaved in this country for 400 years. We've only been free for, we've only been emancipated for 150. And if you ask me, I don't even think we've ever been free of slavery. It just changed forms. But that's another conversation. But the bottom line is, we're still dealing with a system that put in place the law. Like the brother said, put in place laws. And you had the successful the town, and they put in place policies. They put in place laws. And when those didn't work, they put the dogs on you. They put the Klan in there. So over and over and over, they keep telling you, man, you cannot win in this system. And we still have the few that they put in front of us, like Jay-Z. And we still have the few that they put in front of us, like Sean Puffy Combs. We have the few that they put in front of us, like Oprah Winfrey. And they do things that are insulting, like give money to Smithsonian to the Smithsonian Institute to continue to propagate lies, while that money could have gone into the community to do something sustaining. So we also have to understand that, you know, that boule class of blacks that are around there that had the means to pull us up a little bit. That boule class exists for a reason. It's to sell us on the dream while we continue to live the nightmare.
And see, here's the thing that I've noticed, and I think that most, that you two men could possibly agree. Let's take out the race. Let's take out, you know, the topics. Let's talk pretty much universal. You ever notice that the people who are quiet and working, you know, just moving along and working, not advertising, not with the mouth, not staying in the showboat, that's the one that you wind up finding out that later own half the stuff you shop at or frequent or visit?
Mm-hmm.
Usually, let's go back to high school. Usually, the guys in the locker room that don't talk about all the girls they done hit up or touched or felt up or whatever is the one that got all the play. Meanwhile, the ones that talked about, I'll do this and I'll do that, never hit a woman. You understand? Because that's the problem. We're so busy looking for what's flashy, what people see in lights, what people see on the TV, and that's the problem. If you continue to try to get a piece of the big, well, you're only going to be a little fish, okay? You're never going to get anywhere. How can you stand out when there are thousands of people doing exactly what you're doing? Why is it that we're not thinking about dealing with the small so that we could be big fishes in small ponds?
Well, the American dream, Katie.
There's two offers that I had gotten, all right? I think I've spoken with you guys about this before. I never once thought that this little radio show that my team and I had planned, you know, around in my dining room table with coffee and stuff, would ever get this far. I know where our hearts are with it. I know where our mission is with it. But I never thought it would get this type of attention. I mean, now, checking my numbers, I'm at 19,888 listeners. Now, you know, it makes me feel good because regardless of whether people are talking or not, people are listening. So suddenly now my email got flooded and I got a Facebook hit up from people that want me to go network. You know, they want me to go take the show to another area. And the funny thing is that while, of course, us going on a bigger level with certain things is a good thing, not everything that glitters is gold. And the point is, I don't want the tone of the show to go commercial. And I don't know if I'm explaining that correctly. I think once that this gets too commercial or gets caught up in the big network world, it's going to take away from the uniqueness and the intimate connection that I'm trying to make it be. I don't think people are going to start feeling, you know, or it's going to have the same tone. Because once you go too corporate, you really lose or relinquish control of the way it runs.
Right. It takes from the integrity of the show.
Right, and I don't want that to happen because I'm not a Hollywood person. Never have been, and I'm not looking to be that either. I've got big dreams, but I don't want to be something that everybody could see in any old corner. If I'm going to be in a magazine, if I'm going to be on some show, it's going to be for the work that we're doing here, and that's what counts to me. And out of the three offers that came through, only one of them has the integrity and the homey feel that I'm looking for. One of them, I think, is just trying to capitalize on the fact that this little nobody, you know, is doing something. The other one, I believe, is if once that person gets us in his clutches, he's going to bring us in with a sweet deal, but he's going to chop things up in the corporate world. And I really don't want that. Because then people like the New Millennium Leaders, people like another group that just reached out to me of a bunch of young teens really trying to do something, they're going to lose their footing.
Well, you know what we need, Katie?
They'll do you like they did the man from BET. They'll take, some of them are even buying up certain businesses of us that were powerhouses. And then, you know, the white man came and brought it. And then, you know, then it took strength away from us and power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, we got to stay vigilant as a people, those of us who have that understanding. You know, and just
and
like the brother has been saying, we got to keep it together. Those of us who know, like he said earlier, those are the ones who we can depend on as the foundation. Everybody else will come along as what was being said as they see you. Because then when they see you stepping out there, that's why if I had to fight battles here, and it's by myself, long as somebody see me, that's planting the seed. You
exactly,
see money, keep planting.
Mm-hmm. It's those little quiet people that eventually make the big difference. Martin Luther King refused to strike back. I'm sure Malcolm wasn't too happy with that, but each of them did their part in their own ways. But that's what makes a team. That's what makes a team. A team is not everybody doing the same thing the same way. Okay, think about recipes. How many thousands of recipes are out there, but the basic ingredients are the same. It's either chicken or beef or turkey or fish. It's just a matter of who does what with the spices and how it's prepared. That's what it is. That's the good thing about creativity. There's no end to it. And the one thing is that if it's a passion of yours, nobody can take that away from you, no matter how they commercialize it.
Well, you know, I'm going to think the opposite a little bit. And I'm not saying, I know what the networks will do with your show. But what I would think is if you go out there and you make a splash, and then if you don't like the way things are, your name is out there now. So then you can become an independent again. And become an independent, you will draw the people to you because they will be looking for KD. You know, they'll be looking for On the Edge. But I understand what you're saying.
Don't get me wrong, Professor. I'm not biting my nose off to spite my face in any way. I definitely am going to take apart all the elements. Definitely going to take apart all the elements and see how, you know, they could work for us for a change. It's not that. It's just, you know, it's just like I said, this is really important to me. It's important to the people. I mean, listen, I have three people email me to tell me, one, stop from thinking suicide. One, stopped her daughter from being in an abusive relationship at 14. You know, another one turned his life around and actually took care of his kid. So, you know, that means more to me than any signed contract.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want anybody trying to make me feel like I should be second-guessing feeling this way, because that's exactly what happened into all the things that I went through to get to this place. Okay? Now, speaking of this particular Facebook discussion that I spoke to you about, everybody knew of the broadcast and what it was for tonight. The pre-broadcast topic was answered by most of these people, well and intense, and instead of anybody coming to the forum where it's our forum, they're still responding to each other over this silly comment that I brought up to you. And mostly what I'm reading is that each man is trying to show how much better they are than the other man.
Oh, man, are they pulling them out?
They're still going out. They're still going out.
Oh,
while I'm thinking, I'm getting about 80 Facebook notifications because these guys are going at it, talking about women. One guy is talking about how we need to look at our women as queens. Listen, a real person's power is you go, you say what you got to say, you drop the mic, and you move it on. You don't come back and say it again. These guys are going at it. And where they need this thing, this is right here where other people can hear that our race is not about, you know, pimping out our women.
You know,
it's more important about them banging on their chest than it is to actually put this Facebook activism to where it counts. That's
how this is the modern, modern age catfishing. So you got some modern age fishing going on right now. some modern age posturing going on now. So
right, I'm hearing everybody going, "Oh God," you know. I'm hearing, like, I can hear them going, "Oh God, you fool! You, I think protect my honor." You know, this type of garbage. It's the whole thing. What I'm saying is, before we can stand united, where it really counts, we have to clean up our own internal hatred. We have to stop putting our women down for wearing things that they feel makes a change for them. People's self-esteem is based on different things. It's our job to uplift each other. It's a man's job to be by his woman's side and vice versa. It's not about taking and not giving. It's not about saying that I'm going to sit back and let my child walk to every corner and see a liquor store every three stores. It's not about there was a space that's been abandoned forever, and the first thing that they want to do when they board it up is to put a fried chicken restaurant or a liquor store up there, or a strip club or a club. That's the whole thing. Why not have an after-school center? Why not have a Boys and Girls Club that people in the neighborhood can actually afford? Why not have a great... Yeah.
No, I was going to say,
why not have that be a forum for people like the New Millennium Leaders to have an actual place where they can go and execute these programs that they're out there doing? An actual place.
Well,
where we can actually say it's functional and let's get some funding.
Well, my take on all that is and this goes back to the original topic of the original point of your show, less talking and more walking. You know, it's time for us to get out there and start walking it and hit the streets. I mean, this is natural to me because I hit the street. You know, if I'm walking down the street, I'm talking to people on the block, I'm talking to people in the neighborhood. If I'm out and about and I see something going on, I'm addressing it. And the programs that I get involved in are all in the neighborhood. They're all grassroots, and I think it's important that people see us walking it, so that when we start talking it, they say, "Well, this is not just somebody that's yelling from their porch, or this is not just somebody that's talking from this angle or another. This is somebody that's actually out there, that's about what they're doing, about what they're talking about putting that work in." You know, there's a saying now. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, I'm going to say absolutely. I was agreeing.
So,
continue.
Well, you know, there's a saying now that, you know, that our children use, and when they refer to the streets, then they say that they're about that life. And I want to change that whole thing. I want to change what that means. So when I go out and I talk about building and uplifting the community, and I talk about being educated about the gentrification laws that are being put in place and the policies that are going on in front of these things are happening in broad daylight. So when I bring those things out and I'm talking about love in the community, I want that to become about, I want it to be about that life. And I want to project about that life being about uplifting and building within the community, being about educating, learning the true history. And I'm not talking about going all the way back to Africa. I'm talking about post-Civil War era till now, learning the true accomplishments, learning all the inventions and things that were added to this nation of ours that were created at the hands of somebody that looked like the children that have been told that the future is hopeless, that their past was hopeless and their future is hopeless. I want them to understand that that's all a lie. That you've been lied to and deceived, and then to understand the reasons that they were lied to and deceived so that they can understand that they have purpose, they have a reason, and if somebody is working hard to kick their foot on you back while they have you pinned down, there must be a reason why they don't want you to rise. And that's the message that I want to get to them, that we must rise.
Gentlemen, I want to bring up something. I want to get your opinion on this. First of all, you're absolutely right, Professor, in everything you just said. And I wanted to interject and add something to that. I want you to get out there and make it a goal of letting our kids know that when they say they're about that life, that there is no life on the streets. That's what I want them to get. That life is living and doing something and progressing and being able to grow old and enjoy what it is that you suffered through or you've achieved. Here's the other thing. Something very disturbing because quite often I usually try to make a face-to-face like survey of research for my topics when I'm talking about certain things. And with my, you know, just by if I'm on the train and I hear conversations and I'll walk up and I'll start a conversation. I spoke with 10 kids. In this group, there was a cousin, a couple of sisters and brothers, I think, and of course, a couple of their friends, and they were all coming back from school. And I heard them speaking about all the things they want. So I asked a single question, and the age ranges were 18, 15, 12, and I think 11 and 10, if I'm not mistaken. Now, I asked them, what would they consider that they're being successful? Like, if they had it or if they've achieved it, what would they consider having achieved their ultimate success? Do you know that this is what I got in response? If I had Oh, and actually one of them was 23 because he was the chaperone for all of them. A certain car, I forgot which car it was. If, you know, I would get this. I would get this car. I would get this phone. I would get this apartment because it'll be X, Y, and Z amount of dollars a month. And I would have these kicks. And I said, so what about, you know, like a house or own it? Nah, because I don't know if I'm going to have any kids, so I won't need a house. Well, what about starting a business? Now, if I'm getting paid the top dollars, I don't need to own a business. One of them was in their second year of college. So I asked, well, what's your goal when you come out of college? To be the top paid employee in Jay-Z's company. I said, does Jay-Z have a company, honey?
Well, you know, the irony about all of that, and it was something I was going to bring up earlier, mm-hmm. is the whole, when you were talking about the person who has the flash versus the quiet person in the background that owns everything. And right. It's the message. It's the message. You think about the Super Bowl and the commercials during the last Super Bowl when you had Jay-Z coming out with his new album. And how hard he was working everybody, how he was sitting at the desk, everybody he was working to come up with the product, with the quality, you know, all the top name executives, you know, black executives in the music world, and DJs, editors, whoever. But when you see the other image, you see Rick Rubin laying down, taking a nap, sleeping on the couch, and then Jay-Z selling his idea, pitching his dreams to Rick Rubin. That message is powerful because when you watch that, who do you think is in charge?
It's definitely Jay-Z. Well, just think right. about it. He came in and ruined the franchise, or tried to ruin the franchises of New York basketball. He took a Jersey team, which I think the governor of Jersey at that time, I think he's the governor still now, Christie. All right? I actually like him because he's a wise ass, and I love it because he says stuff straight up, you know. But he was like, well, if they don't want to be New Jerseyans, then the hell with them. Why would you want to come and try to split what is the icon of a state simply, you know, to make something new or split it up only because you can? Instead of you trying to be that child that has too much money and wants to show power, why aren't you using that to invest in what makes a difference? Because as soon as Jay-Z's raps get old or don't hit the new slang or ain't up to date, he's going to be a nobody just like all the other has-been rappers.
Well, we have to be careful with that, too, with that whole analogy that Jay-Z owned the Nets. Because, he was... His image was used to gentrify Brooklyn so they could build the Barclays Center. So, and understanding even that aspect of it all, you have to, I'm sorry about that background noise, you have to understand that this guy has been pimped and hoard for his attributes and for because of the amount of influence he has. Which he earned by snitching on Jay Prince, Suge Knight, and Dame Dash as they sought to create the first black distribution company. So he earned all of his accolades by telling on them and getting them raided and investigated by the FBI and having all their offices shut down. Then having them sacked down with legal problems and legal troubles to the point where they couldn't put together that conglomeration. But that's another conversation for another day. The whole idea is, the whole concept that I think we need to focus on is the things that we can control. We can't control those images because those images are put in place by billionaires to serve a purpose. But what we can control...
We can have smart smartness of our own and say, you know what, that's TV. That's a guy that's made millions, and that's not going to happen for us no time soon. We need to work with what's smart now. This is what I'm saying. I mean, listen, slaves got beaten, and it wasn't a great thing. The lighter-skinned slaves were in the house and were told to do things to the yard slaves. That didn't feel good. It wasn't a great thing to hear about. When did we start at least using our heads based on that, based on saying, listen, I got beat with a belt. Not even a belt. My grandparents, as much as we could joke about it now, used to make us go to the woods and pick a switch to weed our butts. You know, well, did we like it? No. Can we understand the value in it? Yes. But why can't we say that we're going to take what the end results were and go a different route with it?
Well, I'm never going to tell you why we can't, because we can't. What I'm telling you is why it hasn't happened yet. And
okay.
We need to understand the obstacles in our way. You know, I can't send you out to a race blindfolded, and I'm gonna dig a pit for you, then I'm gonna put a moat in, I'm gonna stick an alligator in there, and then I'm gonna say you need to run this race and win. If you don't, but getting all the blindfold is keeping you from seeing all the obstacles in front. So when the obstacles start happening, you say, "Whoa, you didn't tell me this was going on." So we have to also get we have to understand the system. We have to understand the racial politics that take place. So when they put policies in place, like, you know, brother spoke about the whole knockout game earlier, and that, you know, that correlates to another thing that's happening now, where you have a street harassment law that's taking place that they're pushing for. A lot of black feminists are pushing for the street harassment law, and all that correlates with the fact that crime is down in every metropolitan area in the country. So now the prisons aren't being filled to the capacity that was agreed upon when the state signed contracts with these privately owned contractors. So the state is being sued. So now they need new laws. Understand that we can talk all we want about what we can do, but there are obstacles in our way. And unless we address it, the fact that if you're a black or Latino male, you're 3 times as likely to be detained after being arrested than your white counterpart.
Right.
That these systems are put in place to reconnect you to slavery. You know, slavery wasn't fully abolished. If you read the 13th Amendment, if you're arrested and convicted, you can become a slave again.
That's
actually in the Constitution. So, you know, these things, we have to understand that these things exist. Make our children aware that they exist, and empower them to become that generation. Because our generation, for as much as we're talking, our generation is complacent. They don't have the courage to be a nonconformist. In fact, we talk about nonconformists today as they're crazy, they're conspiracy theorists, they're living in the past. And I'm talking about comments that I've read on social media not 24 hours ago. When you think of, and these are from so-called the new black professionals, which is that new boule class of black of us that are coming into focus. And if their focus is like that, where they're talking about not fully supporting black-owned businesses, supporting causes in the black community until it happens to them, and not supporting issues, the education, things of that nature, not caring about the history, not being able to understand that we can also give an account of the history, that we are qualified researchers, that we can also bring that information, and that we can, don't need it qualified by Europeans, that we can also, that the quality of the information we can bring, that we bring to the table is authentic. But until we get them to understand all of that, that everything else we're saying blows in the wind. Until we can grab our children and snatch them from in front of the television, everything we're saying is blown in the wind. I mean, you can even look at, Charlie Brown cartoons, where I don't even know the black kid's name, but he was always on the other side of the table when they sat down for dinner and meals, you know, and sitting in a pink chair. So, you know, what are these images for? These images are put in place for a reason. You know, you find out that Walt Disney was hiring pedophiles to be cartoonists and artists. What are these images put in place for? And you find out that our children are being killed But there's a science. There's a science to it too, Katie. It's not as simple as us just looking at a problem, diagnosing it, and then addressing it. There's a science to
no,
it. Why are black children on the street
I mean,
being shook? No, no, I got you. I was just on a roll. but
we definitely can't just go out there and say, you know what, I'm Superman and I don't like what you're doing, so we're going to wipe out this oppression. Hell no. But we have to definitely, like you said, if we've got all this 4 billion, I see, oh my God, all these Facebook activists, they come up with, they got economics 101 down to a pat. Do you know that black people account for $450 billion worth of purchasing power? If you know all this, how come you're not sitting up there telling your kids you're not going to give Jay-Z or Michael Jordan another $400? I saw a pair of Jordans on the Foot Locker, if I'm not mistaken. And they
because
called this
we lost the concept of love.
They called this a wholesale site, Professor, for $500.
But listen, Katie, to answer all your questions, we lost the concept of love. So we replaced it with the material gains. We replaced the love with the material. I want to show my child how much I love them. I'm going to buy them this new this. I'm going to buy them this new that.
My parents used to tell me no for certain things, even if it was for Christmas. And you might have gotten that thing for a Christmas. And they understood it. My dad was the cheapest thing since God knows what. He's sitting on a pile of money now, but he'll buy anything with economic, you know, economic thinking. All right,
I work with rich people. You know what? I work with rich families. You know, as a therapist, I go into the I go into the community, and more than anything, I observe. I observe it, and you know, it's a real good sociology experiment. Anybody wanted to partake, feel free. You learn a lot. You know what they do? They're shopping at. They do this shopping at thrift marts. They do this shopping at they go to Walmart and buy their children clothes. They don't go to the designer stores and buy this, the designer places and buy that. You know the video games they buy their children? The cheapest ones on the market. So instead of the PlayStation 4s and Xbox Ones, their children get the Wii, and their children are ecstatic about playing with the Wii. They make it a privilege that they have to earn to play, and you get 1 hour. And, you know, it seems we need to grasp those concepts because we mistake material interest for love. And the reason why is our existence is so harsh that we feel so bad for our children because we're not empowered. We're not empowered enough to take our children out of the miserable condition that we put them in, that we're going to suffice it with products. We're going to suffice it, or we're going to give them this material thing. We're going to buy them the expensive sneakers so they can walk around the house so proud, look in the mirror. Now, the paint chipping off the wall, but they can walk past the mirror and look good in those sneakers. You know, the television is running up the electric bill. You have to keep making agreements to pay, but you got the video game going on 24 hours a day. You know, all of these different things and these different concepts, we need to understand, we're just trying to fulfill that hatred. We're trying to fulfill that void of love with material objects.
Because when we were growing up, not being able to get it for poverty or whatever, that's what we thought. That, you know, we love our kids, so whatever little bit we can, we'll save. Yes, I get that. Gentlemen, we're down to our last 4 minutes. And I don't want this cutoff thing to happen. I want to thank you guys very much. Professor, as usual, I always, you know, appreciate what you're doing in the community and bringing it here to the forum. Al-Tariq, it's been really wonderful having you on. I think you've been with me 4 times now, and you've brought some great input, you know, to the show. You keep doing what you can do, whether you're by yourself for the moment or not. Eventually, somebody else is going to get tired like you and join, and then there'll be two. And whoever else, especially if the one thing you do benefits in, or gets the change they were looking for all along. So,
and let's link up.
I just want to let you all know the week of January 10th, if everything is going according to plan, I am going to be undergoing surgery, so there will be no live shows for that week. But you guys have been phenomenal. And I feel that the only way we can start to make a change is if we present or project a different image from the collective right now, from what the TVs are putting out there, if we continue to preach internal love and not self-hatred, the ones that, you know, that's not the misguided Facebook activist version, that a woman that picks a weave is not black, or somebody with proper English is trying to be white, or all those type of things. But the fact is that we need to be able to say, love yourself as you are, and if you want to add changes to yourself or yourself, that's what makes a difference. But in the process, you know, until tomorrow night, I would like all of you to be blessed, be a blessing. Happy New Year. Thank you for spending your holiday with me. To those that were here and had to get off, thank you. And, Professor, any new items that come up in your mission, yours, Ishmael, you too, Al-Tariq, if you see anything, continue to hit us up so we could address the issues and make it a topic if we have to, okay? So thank you, gentlemen, and I will see you all tomorrow night. So God bless.
God bless. Thank you.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues.